Look like an angel.
Look like an angel.
Walk like an angel.
Walk like an angel.
Talk like an angel. But I got wise. You're the devil in disguise.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Hope and Chris finish the last episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. Luckily, dependable Dave Filoni and crew create Rebels with new characters, new places, and new adventures, thus keeping hope alive for this podcast. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars Rebels. In this episode, a new droid arrives at the Rebel base, but Zeb, Chopper, and AP-5 realize it's not what it appears to be. There will be... AP-5's kind of a dick this week. Lanky Monster Bot, and it's a Zebisode, everybody! I love Zebisodes! Yay! We're talking about Warhead this week. How you doing, Chris? Ask me what I did today.
I'm doing well, Hope. What did you do today? You sound like you did something today. Did you do something today? What was it?
No, I just kind of like started deep diving into the Donner Party.
Oh, geez. All right. Maybe you want to be a guest on Eat It and Beat It for that one.
Ugh. No, it was kind of a weird thing. So like anybody who knows me knows I love the Weather Channel and I constantly watch the Weather Channel. Every Sunday morning, I drink coffee, clip coupons and watch the Weather Channel. I've always loved it. It's something I don't get to talk about too much on the show, but I love it. Well, yesterday I watched a little bit of Real Time Tornado, which is shows I've watched a million times. So today I was doing some work for my stepmom. And so I looked up the other episodes on YouTube, and I was binge watching more Real Time Tornado, which then put me on When Weather Changed History. So I was watching some of When Weather Changed History. So then I came across the Donner Party, and I was like, huh, I never really, like... I know the basics of the Donner Party, but I never deep dive right about them. So then I spent like an hour and a half just reading about the Donner Party. That was my day.
Yeah.
Tornadoes and cannibals.
And what a party it was.
Yeah, a party that nobody liked. If Carrie Fisher was there, she would have put on the holiday special and made everyone leave.
Yeah, or just kill themselves outright.
Yeah, but we do have
they would have worshipped her like a goddess because they never would have seen anything like video before. They would have been like, what is this message from the gods or the devil? And probably the devils with like Chewbacca and his family going and then Harvey Korman. Oh geez, what form of woman is this?
Speaking of Wookiees, I'm currently looking at a picture of a Wookiee with a lightsaber, because there's some Star Wars news that is actively happening as we're recording. So, I want to talk about it for a second. Chris is not as excited as I am. I don't even know if you knew about it before I told you, like, 5 minutes ago, did you?
No, I didn't know about it.
So, at the time of this recording, Project Luminous is being announced tonight. And to give you some background on Project Luminous... I have a little news article pulled up, and the reason why this is such a big deal is if you take a look at Disney's Star Wars and think of it in, like, MCU terms, this is kind of like the beginning of Phase 2. If Tross was the end of Phase 1, this is, like, the beginning of Phase 2. And a lot of people have been speculating that this is going to lead into the Rian Johnson movies, but that's not confirmed. That's just speculation. So what do we know about the project so far? The project, precious little in terms of plot, but we do know some information that speaks to Project Luminous scale and format. Star Wars first announced Project Luminous at Star Wars Celebration Chicago. Project Luminous has been described as a singular, cohesive story that will be told through multiple outlets, including comic books and prose fiction. The publishers involved with this project include Disney Lucasfilm Press, Del Rey, Marvel, and IDW Publisher. We also know the creators. Each of these writers have at least some Star Wars fiction in their resume. They include Kevan Scott of Star Wars Adventures, Claudia Gray, who did Lost Stars, Charles Soule, who did the Darth Vader comic that I love so fucking much, Daniel Jose Older, who did Star Wars Last Shot, and Justina Ireland, who is Star Wars Lando's Luck. And then it talks a little bit more about what it is, but then Lucasfilm teased Project Luminous again with the message, "The Force is what gives a Jedi his power. It's an energy field created by all living things, until Project Luminous 2020. And it's the until that suggests that something will change in Project Luminous. The nature of the Force seems to be the central story of this project." Soul has described Project Luminous as a massive Star Wars event. Some rumors have... Okay, so now I can actually get out of speculation, because now we have our first leaks. So that's what it is. It seems like it's the beginning of Phase 2. We know that it takes place... we think it takes place 300 to 400 years before the original Skywalker trilogy. And until about 10 minutes ago, it was just speculation that it was going to take place in what's called the High Republic. And the High Republic has already been teased in a few comics the last few months. It was teased actually in two Charles Soule books, which is the Rise of Kylo Ren comic and the current Star Wars run that he's writing. And so, yeah, and they leaked out the first book cover, and it's called Star Wars, The High Republic, Light of the Jedi. So I'm excited. I know we were starting to talk about this beforehand. You were just all like meh before, but like, I've been really looking forward to Project Luminous. For one, I will read anything Charles Soule, and I will read anything Claudia Gray. They are my two favorite Star Wars writers. From what I can tell from a few things I've read, this time period of the High Republic means that the Sith are still in hiding, which means there has to be a threat coming from something else. And it's a time period that even the EU hasn't even really gotten into it. They never really got into this particular time period where the Republic was at its height. And I'm excited because I think it's a smart idea to move away from the Skywalker trilogy and have new stories with new characters and a new time period that hasn't really been developed. Because I think the one thing is that, like, while I love the Skywalker saga, there's so many emotions tied up in it. Like, you have original trilogy fans that are, like, very, like, that's very protective of it. You have new fans that, like, are really into these new stories and stuff. Which has caused for a lot of clashing. And with so many emotions wrapped up in the Skywalkers, I like this idea that we're moving away into something completely different. Thoughts?
Yeah, I do too, in theory. I'm not really, the thing that makes me meh about it, and not so much, like, I'm not as much meh about, like, trilogy of Rian Johnson movies set in that time period or something, but having everything sort of going, and once again, this is a lot of stuff. The comics, I haven't been buying them just because I couldn't afford to keep up with the Star Wars comics coming out, but, you know, eventually I'll be able to pick them up someday in trades or whatever. But, you know, and I'm never been a fan of reading the books. So if it's a direction in the books, that's something that they did, you know, back in the Legends days. I think that stuff was maybe like 1,000 years or 4,000 years before, something like that. But I'm not as interested in that stuff. It's sort of like, you could have good stories within that context, but it's almost like out of the context of what you got brought into it. It would be like if you like were watching a bunch, 9 movies set from, you know, the 50s till now, you know. Or set from World War II till now, you know, a family saga and stuff. And then the next set of everything was going to come from, like, you know, the 14th century or something like that. Or, you know, it would be set in medieval times or something. It might as well be a different world altogether. Although, you know, you're going to have Jedi and Sith and the Force and stuff like that. It's just, it'll be strange, you know. It would be interesting because, like, visually it would be neat to see the technology, you know.
Yeah, because I'm looking at the cover that was leaked, which is the Charles Soule novel. and it looks almost like a fantasy novel. Like, yeah, it has four Jedi on the cover. One of them is a Wookiee holding a lightsaber, which I think is cool as hell, because Wookiee Jedi. But it looks like a fantasy novel.
It's hard to tell. It's like very, it looks like, you know what it looks like to me? A young adult novel, like a younger, young adult novel.
But I would say probably not. Charles Soule doesn't tend to do the young adult stuff. If it was Kevan Scott has been, Daniel and Justina Ireland, they're the ones that have been writing a lot of Star Wars young adult novels.
I'm just saying that the it looks like the cover of a young adult's novel is what I should say.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing you can tell about the story. I mean, you don't, like, the outfits they're wearing are very plain and, like, it look, you know, it's just basically a shot of the characters in an environment that's like a sandstorm or something. So you don't see where they are, what, you know, they're fighting something, there's lightsabers drawn, but it's just sort of, it's almost like character study of, you know, of the main characters. But
I'm trying to figure out if that's a starship or a floating city in the background, because it kind of looks like a floating space station, not an actual starship.
It's just a disconnected image, you know. I mean, it depends. I was very meh about Marvel when it started up. I was like, Iron Man, huh? But see, yeah. I don't know if I was really too interested. So, you know, whatever, it could totally surprise me. But I'm also, you know, going to be probably blissfully unaware of the books and stuff. So it'll be a bigger test to see if like movies will work in this time period better if you're not reading the books and stuff like that. And
yeah.
It's if they started just doing a bunch of movies based in that period, it would just tank the normies' minds, because they have no idea what's going on as far as timeline with Star Wars. I always have coworkers and stuff going like, now, when does this one take place? Is that before the old new ones or the new old ones? I don't remember. And, you know, it's so... Yeah, we'll see. You know,
I figured you'd be mad on it because you've never been a big book person. You guys know I'll probably be reading and delving into this, so I'll definitely be able to keep you guys up to date. But as of right now, the official announcement doesn't start for another hour and a half, so we might not even be recording at the time. But I'm gonna keep an eye on the leaks throughout the course of us recording for this episode, just in case anything else pops up. So. Oh, I also, so remember last week when we were doing Ghost of Geonosian Part 2, and I was like, oh, I forgot to watch the Rebels Recon. So I should have watched
that. Would that have helped?
It addressed three of my notes that I had for the episode. So quick route about that. Actually, like two of them. Jin's not there. Because I had asked, I was like, I wonder if Jin's still around. She's been gone for 4 years. She's not with Saul anymore.
Okay, there you go.
They did confirm that Click Clack's queen egg is in fact the same queen that's in the Vader comic that Vader, like, decimates. So, way to go, Click Clack. You like, lasted for, like, a year.
Good work, buddy.
But you ready to talk about Warhead. What did you think of the episode?
It was pretty good. It's not a groundbreaker, but it was an amusing and fun episode, and full of visual fun things, as we'll see. I have a feeling a bunch of my notes are going to get knocked out in these episode information.
If it's about Ralph McQuarrie, then probably.
Yeah.
If it's about Empire Strike Back homages, probably.
Oh, yeah, that too.
There's two.
Yeah, that too.
I definitely like this episode. I'd only seen it once, but I remember I'd been a little bit disappointed the first time I watched it, because I love Zeb so much of a character, and I thought it was a wasted Zeb episode. I liked it a little bit better the second time around. I think it's a good Zeb episode wrapped up in a very mediocre plot. So, but there's a lot of really good Zeb character work in this episode. So, but the plot's just kind of like basic. So, yeah. You ready to get into it?
I am.
All right, here we go. Warhead is the 51st episode of Star Wars Rebels, and it was released on January 14th, 2017. It was written by Gary Whitta and directed by Bosco Ng. Some extra information for you. David Accord is the voice of the infiltrator droid, EXD-9. He is the supervising sound editor for several Lucasfilm projects, including Rebels, Resistance, and the LEGO Star Wars franchise. He has also provided the voice for droids through all the series, including Clone Wars. He was also the voice of Sidonna Thano in Resistance. When the story was pitched in July 2015, Warhead, along with the next episode, Trials of the Darksaber, were actually supposed to be one episode, but they ended up separating the two episodes to flesh them out into full stories. Early scripts, and I want to note this because this is one of my points in Act 3, early scripts had Rex on the base, teaming up with Zeb instead of Chopper and AP-5. The opening sequence pays homage to the opening scene of The Empire Strikes Back when the Star Destroyer launches probes. The infiltrator droid's explosive countdown display in its body is a visual nod to be used by the alien hunters in the movie Predator. In Rebels Recon for this episode, they wanted to go back to Zeb's roots for an episode. He was the captain of a guard, so they wanted to showcase him as a leader. And the infiltrator droid was based on early Ralph McQuarrie designs of C-3PO. Though, Dave Filoni said that the one thing he regretted from this episode was the infiltrator droid's designs. He wished they made this episode pre-Rogue One, and in hindsight, he wished the droid was designed closer to look like K2SO from Rogue One. They also clarify that the infiltrator droid was sent out specifically to find this group of rebels for Thrawn, and they also revealed that Thrawn was breaking Imperial mandate in this episode. The infiltrator droids, with the warhead inside them, was such a dangerous weapon that they were actually banned by the Empire, but Thrawn uses it anyway, going against Imperial mandate. Do you know what's also banned by Imperial mandates?
Yoda was banned by the Empire too, yes. Mm-hmm. Can't throw things at Palpatine's head. No, no. Get mad they do. Yeah.
How dare you throw things at the Emperor to try and stop him from overthrowing the Republic and killing other Jedi? How dare you?
Yoda was drunk, but sure, that's why Yoda did it.
How you doing this week, Yoda?
Good, good.
Have you done anything fun?
Fun?
Okay, I don't want to know about Yoda fun.
Oh. Take it back. Okay.
Yoda fun can be scary.
Can Yoda just draw a picture? Oh. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Ew.
That's what Yoda did.
Oh.
Oh, yes.
Oh. Anyway, I have a question for you, Yoda, and then I need a shower.
Can I just interrupt here? Holy yeah. Shit, Yoda. Jesus.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, Chris, I know. I know. It's,
Oh.
We all need... Chris, do we still have the spray bottle for Yoda? Anyway, I have a question for you, Yoda.
Oh, a question for Yoda, yes.
Yeah. So as I was watching, as I was writing this outline, I was watching spring training baseball, and I got to wondering, what sports would you like to play, or what sports are you good at?
Yoda would like to play many sports, yes, yes. Yoda would win, yes. MMA, Yes.
Well, we know that you can throw, like Senate balconies at Palpatine, so maybe discus throwing?
Boring. World Wrestling Federation, yes.
Oh my god, you should be on SmackDown or Raw.
Oh, all of them Yoda will beat. Hulk Hogan. Squash like a bug.
We'll put you inside of a cage match and you have to climb
cage
up.
Cage match.
Oh my god, you'd be so good.
And curling. Yoda would be good at curling.
I love curling.
Subtle art is curling, yes, much like the Force. Plus, Yoda could cheat real easy.
Yoda, you don't understand. Every time the Winter Olympics roll around, the number one thing I want to watch is curling. I absolutely love curling.
Give Yoda a little broom? Swear he won't use the Force, he will. No?
That's true. You could use it to nudge the stones to where you need them to go.
Jedi are powerful stone nudgers.
Well, it's different from lifting heavy rocks, huh?
Yeah, not much. Same idea.
Just the cross eyes.
Yeah.
Well, go wash off, Yoda, and take your weird picture with you.
Another picture you would like, you say?
No! Christmas the spray bottle!
Stamps!
Wow. It's definitely a wow if it squeaked you out.
I wanted to sleep tonight. So much for that.
Wow.
How he could draw so much detail in so little time, too. It was amazing. And horrifying.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, you ready to get into it? Act one?
Let's put that behind us, yes. Miles and miles behind us.
Act one?
Act one.
Here we go. We open with a Star Destroyer shooting out pods, like in The Empire Strikes Back. One ends up landing on Adalon, where our heroes have their rebel base. A couple of googly-eyed spiders are nearby fighting like, "Don't touch me! No, you're touching me! Stop touching me! You touch me first!" But they stop smacking each other around when they see a pod land nearby. And they go up to the pod like, "Whoa! Shiny!" And the door pops open, and out comes an infiltrator droid. I'm just gonna call it Monster Bot, because Monster Bot, it's hideous. I hate it. Monster Bot walks around and spots some rebel ships off in the distance. But as it heads towards the rebel ships, the googly-eyed spiders jump out and attack it, yelling, "Justice for Spider Steve!" We can never forget Spider Steve. He died tragically at the end of Act 2, if you don't know what we're talking about. Rest in peace, Spider Steve. With our heroes, Space Mom is giving out commands to Wedge and Hobby, who continue to do nothing, because Wedge and Hobby don't do anything in this show. And they're all heading out on a training mission. But Zeb is being left behind to guard the base with Chopper and AP Pie. AP Pie! Ha ha! I can't talk tonight. AP 5, which Zeb is super not happy about. And the team leaves, and AP 5 is like, "Oh no, you're in charge? How dreadful. I thought you were the stupid one." And Zeb continues to be unhappy with the situation and has no intention to help AP-5 with counting crates. AP-5 continues to insult Zeb's intelligence until Zeb is done with this conversation. He checks in with the command center and where they picked up what they think is a meteor, but it's actually the Monster Bot. Zeb decides to take Chopper and check it out. And Chopper agrees because AP-5 shows up wanting to count stuff with his friend, and Chopper is like, "I never watched My Little Pony, and this friendship is not magic. Peace out." And Chopper goes off with Zeb. They roll out to where the sensor went down, and they find some dead spiders. But Zeb sees Monster Bot beneath the spiders and pulls it out. The droid doesn't belong to the base, but it doesn't look Imperial either. So Zeb wants to take it back to the base to analyze it. But Chopper wants to trash the droid. But Zeb overrules him since he was left in charge. And he picks up Monster Bot, and they head back to base. Meanwhile, we're about to get sexy as we check in with the Imperials. Alexander Kallus is on the bridge of a ship, and one of his faceless goons says that Monster Bot hasn't checked in yet. So Kallus, who most certainly is Fulcrum, says that they should not chase down every time that there's a comm failure. And he tells the officer to wait a bit and see if Monster Bot calls in. You know, to buy his boyfriend some time. Back with our heroes, AP-5 is going through the rebel inventory like, "Ugh, nothing is color coordinated. There's no numerical system. Everything is terrible. How have these rebels not lost the war yet? Zeb and Chopper arrive, and Zeb wants AP-5 to identify Monsterbot. AP-5 says it looks like an old protocol droid, which is a nice nod because it's based on an older drawing of C-3PO. AP-5 gives it enough power to make it have a system restart. Monsterbot wakes up but has no memory, but it does start taking inventory of the entire area, as well as Zeb, Chopper, and AP-5. And Zeb is like, "Look, AP-5, we don't need you anymore, so you can fuck off!" And AP is not impressed. Zeb gets a call back to command center, so he leaves AP-5 in charge of Monsterbot. Zeb heads back to the command, where a rebel dude is like, "Sir, we got a message from your boyfriend." And Zeb is like, ooh, I wonder if he got my flowers. I sent Kallus flowers. Put him through. And Kallus is like, first of all, I love the flowers. They really spruce up my office. But boyfriend, you have to be careful. Thrawn has sent out a bunch of protocol droids, and one failed to call in. If you have it, it's going to murder you all if it doesn't make contact soon. Be safe, boyfriend. And it's the same droid that Zeb found out in the wasteland. And Zeb is like, well, fuck. Jeez, I can't read, Chris. Jeezy, crazy. What'd you think of Act 1?
It was pretty good. You have Ralph McQuarrie robot versus Ralph McQuarrie spiders versus Ralph McQuarrie early version of Chewie with Zeb.
They actually noted that in Rebel Recon that it was like Chewie and C-3PO fighting.
Yeah. And with just some giant spiders thrown in. And like, yeah, and another one of my notes, it got crushed, the Empire Strikes Back beginning. But it did. I'll also note that it had even musical cues, just real subtle musical cues for when the sound of the probes coming out, just sort of these horns going, burm, blah. And I remember when I saw that with the symphony, you could hear the people warming up that part over and over and over again. And that was pretty cool. But my only other note is the infiltrator also, McQuarrie based that on the robot design from Metropolis. So it's very much like the robot from the old movie, Fritz Lang movie, Metropolis. Mm-hmm. But basically the way that one works in this one, it's sort of a combination of the Terminator and a Transformer.
Which is kind of what this one ends up doing. It transforms into a Terminator bot.
Yeah, but it starts out like you, when you see it like looking through its eyes, like identifying everything. That's very Terminator-like too, you know. So it's, well, they call him an infiltrator, which is sort of, I think that was the name of the model that they made of the original Terminator. They called it an infiltrator one because it was one that looked like a human. So it's the same sort of idea. It comes in and it's supposed to match its surroundings while all the time looking to just wreck the shit. But the whole Terminator / Transformer thing sounds a little better on paper than it really is in the episode. It's not bad, but it's not as just insanely awesome as that sounds. But that's all I really got for Act 1.
Yeah, I have mostly a few small notes and a question. First and foremost, I hate this monster bot. The reason I call it's so human. I don't like robots with human faces, and I don't like it. It creeps me out. So
well,
that's
it's got
the reason
that
I
crash
call
test dummy blank look on its face.
Oh,
you know.
Oh, I hate it. I hate it. That's why I call it monster bot, because the moment I saw it, I was just like, oh god, I'm squeaked out. I'm squeaking out. Oh god, I'm squeaked and squeaked. No, I don't like it. I hate it, Chris. I hate it. I hate it.
Oops,
I hate it.
AI hell.
I hate it so much. I'm glad they beat the shit out of it. And then it starts eating other droids later in Act 2. My next note is, AP-5 is savage in this episode. He is just putting down Zeb left and right with, like, little one-liners. He is savage this episode.
Yeah, people like to call Zeb stupid.
Yeah. And my next note after that is, how dare you, Zeb is a gem. Zeb is a gem! Don't call him stupid! My next note after that is, I do like the trust that Hera gives to Zeb, though, because I didn't you call him like his her like commander of security or director of security or something?
Right,
like,
right.
Something like that. And it's not a small task to protect the base. Like, they have a really big base. There's other people there. And we also see other humans on the base who are clearly respecting Zeb because they call him sir. They call him captain. So, like, Zeb, it's true. Like, I like that we see that Hera has this trust in Zeb. And these other humans on the base has this trust in Zeb, which means just AP5 is a dick.
Well, it just makes you think why people want to pick on the guy who's the biggest guy that, you know, like a Wookiee can rip your arms off. And he's kind of grumpy to begin with. Mm-hmm. And he also likes beating things up. And people want to pick on him for being dumb. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, and we know that both Zeb and Chewbacca are incredibly smart. They're often portrayed as the muscle, but we know that they're both really smart. And we know that Zeb is a captain of a guard. Well, was the captain of a guard of the Lasat. So, like, he has this past of being a leader. So I do like seeing him in this leadership position when he doesn't have to have, like, Hera or Kanan to defer to. Because now we're getting to see other people call him captain and look up to him and stuff like that. My next one is a question. Do you think it was a bad decision on Zeb's part to bring this droid back to base with them?
Ultimately not. Because, well, I don't know. Well, it's hard to say, you know. Ultimately not, because if it had gone another way, if the droid was destroyed and, like, self-destructed out there, or was sitting out there or didn't report back in, that would put a red light on their base. Almost no matter what happened with that droid, they were going to get spotted once it gets there. And you can't destroy it because it's going to, you know, blow up with this huge explosion. So basically, things went wrong, but in the end, they did about the only chain of events that you could do to make it work out without them getting caught, without them getting marked as a being on that planet. So, yeah, it is good. Anything that led to that outcome is good.
I feel the same way, because I was looking at this trying to, like, get into, like, Zeb's point of view. Because he states that it doesn't look Imperial and it's clearly not there. So this random droid just shows up. And so it would be the logical choice to want to analyze it to see why it's there. And the reason I posed this question in the first place, because Chopper was just like, no, burn the thing. Keep it away from us. But, and like everybody, and like AP5 was questioning Zeb for bringing it back to base too. But I think it was, he was thinking rationally, you know, he was like, this random droid just showed up anywhere. We need to see where it came from. Let's bring it back. But so, yeah, the only reason I posed the question is just everybody else was against it except for Zeb. But I think he chose the logical choice was, let's analyze this and let's see why it's here.
Well, I think what the if you wanted to pinpoint one error in judgment in the show, I guess it would be just powering up the droid. You know, they were like, oh, let's plug it in and see what happens. And then it woke up, you know, maybe it would be better to keep him offline and just, like, analyze him part by part or something like that before you just power him on. But they
also didn't have a reason to suspect anything, because AP5 said that it's a protocol droid. So it's pretty much, it looked like a C-3PO.
Yeah, but I mean, if you analyzed him enough, though, he's got weapons and stuff in there. So you would have to see, like, the weapons and the power supply for the weapons and stuff. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If you did, like, the robot equivalent of a CAT scan on him or something.
Yeah.
A Lothcat scan. That's what they call it in Star Wars.
Lothcat. I miss Lothcats. Me. And the last note that I have has to do when they get the message from Fulcrum from Callus. And I like the progression that we see that Zeb is a little bit more okay getting a message from Callus. Because a few episodes ago, when they found out that Callus was Fulcrum, everybody on the team was just like, oh my god, Callus is Fulcrum? Oh god, that guy. And Zeb was like, oh my god, I recruited Callus. Oh my god. But here, that we don't see that reaction. The guy's just like, hey, we got a message from Fulcrum. And there's no, like, ugh, that guy from Zeb. He's just like, oh, okay, cool. Callus.
Yeah, he's just like, you? See, it is true. Once you go Lasat, you never go bot.
Yes, very much so. But I liked that progression because compared to a few episodes ago when everybody was, like, horrified that Callus was Fulcrum, it's clear that some time has passed and that Zeb is much better with that decision. And that he's more okay with that. But he also is the person that probably would be the most okay with it because he went through that change with Callus back in season two. So I liked that story progression that I remember being really critical during the honorable ones going like, oh my God, like no one, like Callus doesn't get reprimanded and it's such a fast transition that everybody's okay with them. But it's really not. Like they're actually now on this rewatch, I'm realizing more and more that They went through their time of like Callus, but now they're becoming like more and more okay with it. And I like seeing that transition because I missed that the first time through. So, but that's all I have for Act One. Did you have anything else?
No, I just add a little bit to what you just said. Once they know Callus is the is Fulcrum, you know that puts all his prior actions in a different light. You know, I mean, Callus couldn't, you know, no matter what they were doing, like Callus had to go after them and it was doing their job. But at some point, you know, he's turned. So now he's, you know, they're dealing with him in they just instantly put him into a different context. Mm-hmm. Although, you know, I imagine a good part of them are still like, he could be double-crossing us too, you know? This could all be a setup.
Yeah.
Although, sure. If you were going to set that sort of thing up, Callus would probably be a poor choice for it, but as far as selling it, so, yeah.
But that's all I have for Act 1. Did you have anything else?
Nope.
All right. Act 2?
Act 2. I have even less notes. I would have had more notes in this, but they got knocked out before. But I have even less in Act 2.
As I was writing the background stuff, I was like, I bet I'm taking some of Chris's notes.
Yep. Yep. As I was writing. Happens it. A lot.
I know. I was thinking
especially,
about
it. Especially in when it references the old timer movies. That's when it catches me.
Yeah, I was... As I was watching baseball, I was thinking about you because I was like, I'm killing Chris's notes as I write this, so.
Yeah.
Act 2. AP5 is just having the best time with MonsterBot, showing it around, making the bot count shit. But before Zeb can run in there, AP5 mentions that they're on a rebel base. And Zeb runs in too late, and MonsterBot transforms. And it turns into... LankyBot, because it's so lanky. It has these long legs and arms, so now it's LankyBot. And LankyBot is not there to make friends. Zeb starts shooting it, and LankyBot can parkour now, and it's bouncing all around, it has blasters of its own, and it grapples with Zeb, and the whole time Zeb is like, this is the worst! And Chopper gets in on the brawl, but then he gets smacked away, and Chopper getting smacked away sends Zeb into a rage. And Zeb starts sharpshooting and shoots off LankyBot's hand. And LankyBot runs away. And Zeb checks in on Chopper. And Chopper is like, bitch, I told you so. I told you so. Told you not to bring that trash back in here. You didn't listen to me. And Zeb's like, shut up. We don't have time. And Zeb sees that he's damaged the bot. But they can't let LankyBot report back to the Empire. AP5 wants to report back to Hera. And Zeb is like, No, we don't need to bother Hera. You've obviously never seen her in mom mode, and she would ground me, a grown-ass man, for like a month if she finds out. So LankyBot is leaking fluid, and they start tracking it. They follow the trail until they find another base droid that has been ripped apart. LankyBot is now cannibalizing- Hey, I was just reading about the Donner Party! This is really fitting! Yay! Sorry. I had just reading about people cannibalizing people. LankyBot is now cannibalizing other droids and repairing itself. Sorry.
Hey, at least now you're getting something good out of it, you know?
I know. I didn't put the two together that I was going to read about this tonight. I forgot.
Hey, anyway. It just turns out it's cannibal night on Guys and Jedi tonight.
Apparently. I almost started reading about the Andes rugby team crash, but I didn't get to it before I had to get off. So anyway, weird shit that Hope reads in her spare time. With the fluid trail ended, Chopper starts trying to track it, but he can't sense it, meaning that it probably needs more droid parts. Zeb comes up with a plan. They'll use Chopper to lure it out, but since they're surrounded by explosives, Zeb can't shoot the thing, so he'll wrestle it to the ground, and AP5 can turn off LankyBot. AP5 thinks that this is a stupid plan, because it came from Zeb. Well, excuse you, AP, you're just an asshole today. And they start the plan, and Chopper heads out. He's rolling around, making noises, trying to get LankyBot's attention, but then he sees a part of a droid roll out from behind the crate, and Chopper peeks around, and there's LankyBot, like a Donner, cannibalizing a poor gonk droid. Like a Donner is not written in there. Sorry, it's so funny to me.
I figured that.
I know. I don't know why I'm laughing. It's so funny. It's fun. Okay, cannibals are not funny. The fact that I was reading about this and now talking about it is funny. That's the funny thing. Please don't cannibalize your friends. A PSA for JS and Jedi. That's your PSA for the day. Chopper makes some sounds, and it gets its attention, and LankyBot chases down Chopper. Zeb is waiting and leaps off a thing and lands on top of LankyBot, who probably throws Zeb to the side. And as LankyBot has AP5 and Chopper cornered, Zeb pulls out his bow rifle and makes it all sparky. And LankyBot quickly disarms him. And oh no, it starts kicking Zeb's ass, while AP5 and Chopper just stand there and watch. But finally, Zeb is able to grab it with it and wraps himself around it. He wrestles LankyBot to the ground, and AP5 slides in there and is able to shut it down. Chopper scans the bot, and it doesn't have a way to transmit long range communications, meaning the Empire doesn't know about the base's position yet. Zeb reasons it must have a ship nearby. But there's bad news. LankyBot is now counting down, because it looks like it has an anti-capture bomb inside it. They are now on a time clock to figure out what to do before the droid blows up the entire base. Bum bum bum. What do you think of Act 2 and the cannibals?
Launch him into space. It shouldn't be hard for them to launch him into space, but that would be too easy.
It would also still be above their planet.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But if you get it up there far enough, it probably wouldn't hurt nothing. I don't know. It wasn't like it was gonna. I mean, they don't have bombs big enough to blow up a planet. But yeah, I thought this was an interesting part, although I don't. It reminded me a bit of, it had elements of Alien in it with that when they're chasing the creature, and that it had like the sort of clear blood, like it wasn't acidic blood like Alien, but just elements of it, you know. And one little touch I like in there, I like the first person chopper cam. That's not something you see very often.
I have that as a note too. It's so brief, but it's
just a little thing, but it's very horror movie, though, you know?
Yeah, I actually wish that scene was longer, like we got, because it's only, what, like a few seconds. I wish we had, like, a little bit, I kind of wish that entire scene was almost from Chopper's point of view, of him just, like, looking around corners, and you roll a little bit more from his point of view, because I have that note, too. It's a really cool shot. I would just wish it was longer.
When MonsterBot transforms to LankyBot, it reminds me a lot of IG droids, you know. But remember that one episode in Clone Wars with I believe it was R2 got caught by the junker or like traitor guy, and they had the whole ship full of IG droids that got turned on and started fighting. It's at some point. That's how it reminded me, like the way it climbed and parkoured around. But just a little less interesting looking than an IG droid.
I thought he had a note about that. I do, right here in Act 2. There's actually a lot of Mandalorian vibes, because Linky by counting down, it reminds me a lot of IG-11's whole detonation sequence.
Yeah, I had that note. That was my last note. Yep, I had that one too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very much like that. Yeah. But he wasn't as interesting. He didn't have as much personality as any of the IG bots, especially the Mandalorian.
Yeah. But
that's all I got for Act 2.
Well, my first note is, maybe I should not get my little notes first. I talked about Chopper, talked about IG-11. I wrote, this is like a horror movie for droids.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And then my other note is...
What's funny is Zeb is the most monster-looking person there. You know, just sort of like hairy and big and strong. And the monster is the most human-looking thing there. Until it turns into Lanky Droid.
That's true. Though I did write, I actually find LankyBot more tolerable when he doesn't look so human.
right.
I'm like, oh, I can look at it now. Oh, so much better. I can actually, like, enjoy this. Because before it was just terrifying. Now I'm just like, oh, he doesn't look like a human anymore. Okay, I'm fine now. I'm okay now. So, I'm okay with Star Wars droids, but the moment they start, like, looking human and stuff, I'm just like, what I love about Zeb, here we go. Despite AP5 being a dick to him all through Act 1, Zeb's first instincts is to protect AP5 and Chopper from LankyBot. And they're not even loving creatures. But I liked that about him because that shows that Zeb is not going to hold on to grudges when his friends are in danger. And I like that because, you know, AP5 has been a dick to him for the first, like, 10 minutes of this episode. And the moment that he sees they're in trouble, he throws himself at LankyBot and just starts grappling with it. And I love that about Zeb, that he's not going to hold on to those grudges when his friends are in danger. And I wrote that Zeb is the best.
I agree with that, I guess.
And
one of the best.
Yeah. And my only other note is, why is the Empire making droids with bombs that lets people know that there's a bomb inside it? Because the thing is, like, the sneaky thing to do would be, like, not have it open its chest and start a countdown. Just be like, oh, we took it down. Let's let it sit here for 20 seconds. Boom! It goes off. Like, why make it just be like, it has a countdown. Panic. Like, just make it super sneaky, Empire.
I thought the exact same thing, but I sort of came up with a retcon in my mind, sort of.
Like if they accidentally set it off and then they're just like, right, oh, shit, turn it off. Right, or
if you're going around with a ship full of them and one of them malfunctions, it would be good to, you see it and you know. And it doesn't seem to be a super long timer, so that, like, people like it. It's a big enough bomb that, like, nobody could run away from it fast enough, and they might not figure out what's going on as much. You know, it depends on who it is, but, like, you know, Zeb and those guys are more experienced with, you know, weapons of war and stuff, so they might recognize a countdown a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the only thing I could think of, is it was just sort of a safety mechanism in case one of them malfunctioned and it was, you know, your guy that was needed to get away.
Yeah, that's kind of how I thought about it too. It was like, you know, if it went off like on an Imperial ship, they'd be like, oh God, it's this one. Turn it off. So that's kind of how I rationalized it too. But I was also just like, just make them super sneaky so it doesn't project. But I don't think it's in Arabish because Zeb couldn't read that they were numbers. So it was a different.
You just said, like, it looked like a countdown.
Yeah, so those numbers weren't Arabish, but that's all I have for Act 2.
All right. You want to find out how this thing ends. I hope they all live.
Oh, spoiler alert, they do.
Oh.
Act 3. So LankyBot has a bomb inside of it, and it's already counting down to blow up. And they have about 20 seconds left. Oh no, Zeb. But Chopper saves them for the moment by freezing LankyBot's countdown circuits. They can at least move it away from the base. But Zeb is like, wait! My boyfriend said that this droid must report back to the Empire, or else they'll come looking for it. It can't blow up here. And they start running through options. They can't wipe its memory. They can't disarm the Wormhead. Both of those would set off the bomb. But Zepp comes up with a plan. He tells AP5 to rewire the countdown sequence so the bomb goes off when it reconnects back with the Imperial computer on its base. And so when it blows up, it can at least take out more recon droids with it. Thus, the Empire won't know which droid blew up or where it came from. And AP5 is like, damn, that's actually a good plan. I can't believe it came from you. AP5 gets reprogramming the droid, and it turns back from Lankybot into Monsterbot. And they all take cover as Monsterbot comes back online, you know, just in case it tries to kill them. And Monsterbot's like, oh, well, I just need to go home now. And it walks right out of there. Zeb, AP5, and Chopper follow it just to make sure it gets back to its ship. And they watch Monsterbot get back on its ship, but when it tries to contact the Empire, Zeb quickly snipes off its contact dish, because he's awesome. Not being able to call back to the Empire, Monsterbot cranks up the ship and heads out of there. And AP5 compliments Zeb on his work, and Zeb's like, nope, we're still not friends. Drive us home. Monsterbot comes back to the Empire and loads up into a Star Destroyer. And I should note, there are two Star Destroyers. Kallus is on one, and Monsterbot is going to the other one. And it's a bunch of Monsterbots coming home and loading in. Two Imperial techs are like, oh hey, the missing droid is back. Wait, why is it beeping? And Monsterbot blows up, taking the other Star Destroyer with it. And on the other ship, Kallus is like, oh no, it blew up. How terrible. What a tragedy. Look at all the lives lost. And he smiles because he's so proud of his boyfriend. And he goes back to his office and he looks at the flowers that Zeb sent him. Back on the base, the rest of the space family is returning home. Before Zeb can explain about Monster Lankybot, Fulcrum calls in. And Kallus is like, I just wanted to call and let you guys know my boyfriend is the best. And it was great watching the droid blow up the whole Star Destroyer. I love you, Zeb. Bye. But the rest of the Ghost crew is confused and concerned as AP5 starts to explain what happened. But then, it gets sexy in here as we cue up the organs and we see a gorgeous shot of the Chimera, which means it's Blue Husbando time, y'all! Blue Husbando time, y'all! Ah! Oh my god, the Chimera looks so pretty! Thrawn brings in Kallus, wondering what the hell happened to blow up an entire Star Destroyer. And Kallus is like, I bet that the smartest, hottest, and furriest rebel reprogrammed the droid to blow up, sir. And Thrawn is also impressed by that, but there is a problem. There's a problem for our heroes. That means that the rebel base is on one of the planets that the droids were sent out to. Thrawn has narrowed down his search from thousands of planets to now 94. Still a lot of planets, but it makes it a little bit easier to find the rebels. And Kallus is like, oh, well, Carabast. The end. What'd you think of Act 3?
Well, it's that scene was interesting because Kallus really has to play how dumb, like, he has to, like, play up to whatever level of intelligence he thinks Thrawn thinks he is. Because if he plays too dumb, Thrawn's going to know. And if he plays it too smart, Thrawn's going to know. But,
I was wondering what you thought about that Thrawn scene. Because you always say that you never get to see him actively deduce stuff. Well, we get to see him actively deduce here.
I could have deduced that, though. But here's the thing about it, though. He's getting all cocky and talking shit again. And he's just like, ah, well, now we know one of these is the rebel base. Hey, you know what? Hondo and Naka could have pulled off that shit. Yeah, you know?
I have a note for you, Chris, but it'll come later.
I'm just saying, there's the only answer to somebody sending a fuck you droid back with a extra fuck you on it isn't necessarily going to be the rebels. I mean, there's a good chance, but there's a there's other people in the galaxy who would be not too keen on having the Empire know about them or what they're doing or whatever. You know, there's all kinds of smugglers and scoundrels with technical skills.
The show did what you've been telling the show to do, and you're still criticizing it.
That's right. I am.
Because you specifically said in the last Thrawn episode that you wanted to see him actively deduce stuff, and he actively deduces something, and you're still bitching about it.
Yep. Because he didn't do that good. Okay, good try, big guy. Come back in next week, and let's see how your deductions are working. Let's see where his deductions get him. Let's see where those deductions get him.
What's your next note, Chris?
Anyway, on to my next note. This I found ridiculous. You freeze the timer by actually freezing it like it's a Swiss watch or something, that like the ice just like stops it from working. It's kind of weird. But, you know, it's just that it's literally frozen, I thought was really funny. And my only other note is, with all these episodes we've had lately of Rebels with battle droids coming back on them, and now Clone Wars started and there's battle droids and that, it's just like, I just wish there were battle droids on that Star Destroyer to meet the monster bot when he got back, because I would have liked to see that. We've been like, welcome back, brother. Why are he's counting. Why are you counting down? Is it a surprise? You know, something like that. It would have been very satifying to me, but I know it doesn't work and make sense.
Yeah.
But the heart wants what the heart wants, Hope.
It would be really cute because they'd be like, you're back. Oh, no.
Welcome back, brother.
Yep.
But that's all I got for Act 3. Not a lot for me for Act 3.
I really only have one little note and then a question, and then I'm gonna make you do a Thrawn thing.
Okay.
I remembered this. I was like, I'm not gonna remember this, and I was listening to the episode the other day, and I was like, I gotta remember to do that. My first note is, I really like seeing AP5's use here. AP5 doesn't have a lot of use in the show, but I think they showcase him really well in this episode, because he used to work for the Empire. So, like, when they're going through all the different plans, and Zab's like, well, we can do this. He's like, no, that will do that. He really knows what to do and what not to do, because he knows Imperial Protocol. So Zab's like, well, we'll reprogram it. He was like, no, Imperial Protocol will make it do this. Well, we'll disarm the bomb. No, it will make it blow up because of this. And I realized that if Zeb had been alone and he tried any of this, and if he didn't have AP5 there telling him what not to do, Zeb probably would have blown himself up by accident. So I really like seeing AP5's use here, because he was able to use his Imperial background to navigate through the situation. And I thought it was a really good use of AP5.
Yeah. It's a miracle they're even using him.
Yeah, right? I always forget AP5 is here until he shows up. And I was like, oh, yeah, you're in the show. So what I really like about this episode is it shows the best of Zeb, even though it's not the most plot-heavy episode. Because, of course, we know that Zeb is the muscle. But we see that he's tactically smart, too, because he comes up with a really brilliant plan that does help hide the base and not help let the Empire find them. And the plan works, and it works out. And we also get to see that he cares for his friends. Like I was saying in Act 2, like, he drops all his grudges from AP5 bitching at him for the first half of the episode, and he rushes out to protect his friends because they're in danger. So, like, I think they do a lot of really good Zeb stuff in this episode, even if the plot is kind of mediocre. I was a little bit wondering about this episode because I had only seen it once and I remember not really liking it. And I think it's an actually pretty good, Zeb character episode, because we get to showcase how smart he is, we get to showcase how loyal he is, and we get to see how brave he is, because he puts his own body on the line to protect the other two droids and to protect the base. So I thought... It's a mediocre plot, but it's actually a really good Zeb episode.
Yeah, it's not like a deep dive into his family history or something like that, or a big major turning point in his life or something. But it is. It's a nice little character study, and it's done within just an action story. So there's more to it than, you know, just what it appears to be, which is him beating up a droid. So,
yeah, and that's actually a really good way of putting it. Like, we get to see Zeb's actions, and sometimes actions speak louder than words. He doesn't need to have, like, a big speech or anything. We get to see Zeb actively act out who he is. And it's really, really well done and great, and I really enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah. Well, it shows that he's strong, but he's also practical and intelligent, you know.
Yeah. So I liked it. My little note is when they go to restart Linkybot and he starts waking up, I love how they all just like hide behind stuff like, we're not fucking with that thing again. It just made me laugh because the bot started waking up and all three of them just like dove behind. You see AP5 like look over the top of a crate like, is it gone?
Yeah.
It was just a really funny moment. I liked it. Okay, so this is about the end of the episode when the Space Family shows up. So I couldn't remember what episode it was. I think it's the first episode that Hondo shows up in, back in season 2. But I remember I had talked about that I didn't like Ezra didn't have consequences. Because he had fucked off from his chores. He went off with Hondo. He put the rebels in jeopardy. And he didn't face any consequences for his actions. And maybe it's a little bit different here because Zeb's an adult and Ezra is still a teenager, so he's a much younger audience person. But I like that there are consequences for his actions here. And the consequences are, of course, going to come back later. But he didn't listen to Chopper, who warned him. He ignored AP5, and they could have lost their base. And the consequence of Zeb's action is it ended up helping Thrawn. Thrawn is now able to narrow down the planets to try and find their base. Yes, Zeb still was able to protect it, and Thrawn doesn't have all the answers, but I like how, like, what Zeb did does have consequences, which is what I do think is important in a child show, which was my problem with the Ezra episode, is that there were no consequences for his actions. And I think showing that, because Zeb still made all the right choices, but there's still consequences. And to me, like, that is a very important message that's not in a lot of young media. Is because a lot of times, like, I always think of the episode, there's one episode of iCarly. Back when I was nanny, I used to watch a ton of iCarly with my kid. And there's one episode where her older brother Spencer is like, no, you can't go to this wrestling event. And she lies, goes to the wrestling event, and her older brother ends up getting injured. And she has no consequences for her actions. And I was appalled. I was appalled that they were showing that, like, it's okay to lie to your brother and it's okay that he gets hurt because you want to go to this thing. So ever since that episode, like, I've been really, it's something I've always kind of paid attention to is whether or not shows lets its young characters have consequences. And that was why I had such a big problem that Ezra fucked off in an episode from his chores, went off with Hondo, put the rebels in jeopardy, and he faced no consequences. So even though, like, Zeb did a lot of right things in here, I still like that there's still going to be consequences, which is so important for young media to showcase.
What about Thrawn's consequences?
What do you mean?
Well, you say it helped Thrawn, but let's look at it from the next, whoever Thrawn's superior officer is.
I'm talking about it in the point of view of, like, children's television.
Well, yeah, but this is on the show. I'm just saying...
I just wanted to clarify, like, I'm looking at this from the point of children's television, not from the point of the plot. But please continue. I just wanted to clarify.
I'm just saying, we're probably not going to see what it was, but, like, Thrawn is just like, but now I have more. He's not worried about it, and he's just like, but, you know, when you think about it in the context of he was breaking protocol, he was using these things he wasn't supposed to be using, and he ended up just taking out a whole Star Destroyer. Just not even in a battle. There wasn't even a battle. You know, they're just flying along, and Thrawn's plan made that Star Destroyer go in and all the people on it turn into fire. So you'd think there'd be consequences for that. Those things are expensive, man.
I would almost think that the consequences would then fall on Kallus, because it seems that, I can't remember, so don't quote me on this, but I think in the beginning of the episode, there's only the two Star Destroyers, which is Kallus and the other one with the droids. And I think at the end is when we see three, when Thrawn shows up. Don't quote me. I don't remember exactly. But so I think the consequence then falls on Kallus.
I guess, yeah, but he's following Thrawn's plan.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
I mean, the consequences for Kallus would come from Thrawn, but you'd think there'd be higher up consequences for for Thrawn himself.
That is something that I will say that they do really well in the Thrawn novel that they don't do well in the Rebel show, because in the Thrawn novels, every time Thrawn does something, he gets a call from the High Council. He gets court-martialed like 4 times.
Yeah, you just don't have time to do that in 22-minute episodes of Rebels, unfortunately.
Yeah, like he is constantly getting court-martialed in the book.
Although it would have been interesting with Rebels to every once in a while have a political episode, you know, that all was based on, you know, based with like half Mon Mothma and that stuff, and then part Thrawn battling with the higher ups.
I absolutely agree. That's actually one of the things I really like about Clone Wars is seeing those political episodes. Yeah, they tend to be kind of the more low key episodes of Clone Wars, but they also help flesh out that time period, the politics of the Clone Wars and the politics of the Republic at the time. I totally agree with that. I would love to see like Tarkin, Colin, or even just having Thrawn have a line of like the High Council, Agent Cal is the High Council.
Yeah, some of the political intrigue in the Empire is even way more interesting and bloody than it is in it was, you know, in the Republic. So
yeah, I absolutely agree with you. Even if they just tailored it where Callus comes in and he's just like, Agent Callus, what happened? High Council wants to know what happened. They're calling me asking, like, just something like that. That would actually would have added a lot more to that scene to show that there were consequences for Thrawn.
Or Callus keeps getting bailed out by somebody, and you know, like Tarkin likes the cut of Callus's jib.
Or we actually know Yularen is coming in a few episodes, and
right.
Actually,
or somebody from higher up or somebody, you know, somebody sheltering Thrawn from Vader in because they know Thrawn's working they have faith in Thrawn's long term plan, so that would have been interesting.
I totally agree, and I actually, in that context, I think Yularen would be a very good candidate to be that person. Because we know that, we know in a few episodes when we get to Through Imperial Eyes, Yularen actually trained Callus. And Callus actually works for Yularen. They're both ISB, and Yularen's the head of the ISB. But in the Thrawn novel, Thrawn and Yularen are really good friends. They are actually really good friends, and they know each other, and they've known each other for years. So that would have been interesting to bring in Yularen into that, because then Yularen would be stuck between Thrawn, who is his friend, and Callus, who is his agent. And I actually would have really enjoyed seeing Yularen in that position.
Yeah.
That would have been really cool. Now I wish we had more political episodes of Rebels. That would have been great. Because I think that was something that we kept talking about in season one. That was what I talked about a lot. Because one of my favorite things.
Maybe we got one coming up in season 7 of Clone Wars, you know?
That would
be
fun.
We'll actually be at home going like, yes, a political episode.
Honestly, I don't think we're going to have enough time.
No,
Full 22 episode season. Yeah. But because that was one of the things I loved about season one is I was constantly talking about the politics of the Imperials, because you had Grande being the Force user, Tua being the propaganda baby, Callus being the ISB agent, and then Tarkin being the district manager. Mm-hmm. And there was all this intrigue between the four of them, and especially Tua, Grande, and Callus were constantly butting heads against each other. So that is something I really wish Rebels had more of. Just make sure I cover the rest of this big note. Yeah, pretty much cover the rest of that big note. All right, I have a question for you, Chris.
I'm ready. A question for Chris you have, okay.
Yeah, as I said in the background information, early scripts of this episode had Rex in it instead of AP5 and Chopper. How do you think that this would have worked out differently if it had been Rex and Zeb teaming up instead of Chopper and AP5 there?
I think story-wise, it would have been similar, maybe slightly better to have Rex the one earning his, picking on Zeb and then earning his respect. But they've been battling together. So, but I think it was a good decision not to have Rex in it, just because Rex is another badass. So then you would have two badasses after the robot. And this, it's just a lot more interesting having Zeb having to deal with it basically as the only force that can fight, you know, besides the robots are limited to doing their robot things and turning off the droid, you know, they get their points to do it, but you know, it's more interesting to just have one character that's a physical presence in it. So I think it was a wise choice to have the two droids because it's more of a contrast, you know?
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. Because as much as I love Rex and I always want more Rex in this show, I think it would only have been cool if it was... I kept thinking back to the Clone Wars movie, and one of Rex's very first line is, in his experience, experience outranks rank, pretty much. Like, he was like, you know, you might outrank me, Ahsoka, but you don't have the experience, so... Which was the gist of it. So I could see them spinning this in a way where maybe Rex was giving him Zeb some grief because Zeb's a captain. He's in charge of the base, but maybe Rex sees him not having as much experience, and then Zeb earns that respect. I agree. But I think that they wouldn't have been successful because AP5 proved so pivotal in this episode because he's the one that was checking Zeb going, we can't reprogram, it will explode. You can't disable the warhead, it will explode. And he was mm-hmm. pulling on his imperial past. So, mm-hmm. but we also know that Rex worked for the Empire too.
Well, I was just going to say, you could do the same thing with Rex too.
Yeah, Rex worked for the Empire too. So he could have done the same thing as well. Like, he might have been familiar with this.
It also makes it just a lot more exciting because it's only one person against the robot instead of two people. So it makes the odds, you know, more exciting.
Yeah, and I agree. And this does feel like it's supposed to be more of a comical episode, even though it has kind of a horror movie take on it. And but it would, I think it would have been cool. Like, we've only really seen Rex team up with Ezra and team up with Kanan. I think it would have been, because I always like when they have like unique pairings. Like, one of the few things I like about the Mortis arc is the fact that Obi-Wan and Ahsoka get to team up. And that's one of the things I love about the Kadavo arc is Obi-Wan and Rex get the team up. So I like when the show does like those rare pairings that you don't usually get. And that'd be probably about the only thing I would be really looking forward to, is I like when shows do those rare pairings of characters that are not usually together. But Rex and Zeb are such similar character types in Rebels. Rex is very different in Clone Wars, but in Rebels, he's very similar to Zeb. So there wouldn't be too much. So there is a nice contrast with Zeb with Chopper and AP5. All right, Chris, you ready?
Okay.
Remember, it's a Thrawn episode, so you have to say something nice about Thrawn. And you already used his appearance, so you can't say that he looks nice graphically.
Okay.
But you have to say a nice thing about Thrawn. His ship is Chimera.
Why are you asking me if you're just going to answer the question?
That's
how about this?
Thing.
How about this?
I squealed when I saw the Chimera. I was like, it's the Chimera!
How about this? He's never killed any characters that I like.
I love it. It's like pulling teeth. Okay. I'll give you that one. So now I'm going to make a note of this. So now I'm trying to keep track of all your things. So.
Okay.
Thrawn. Appearance. Never killed a character that... I don't know why I capitalized all that, but whatever. Liked. All right, so you got two down. I'm so proud of you, Chris. You're doing
good. Thank
you. So proud, so proud. But that's all I have for this episode. Did you have anything else?
No, I'm ready to score it up.
All right, Chris, score it up for me.
I gave it an 8. It's just a poking above average show. It wasn't especially visually stunning, but I like the Ralph McQuarrie stuff in it. And it was just fun. And it was a nice, just little like pocket episode. It didn't really have any like large scale story to it. It had a little bit. The stuff with Thrawn at the end adds to, you know, it adds a little bit to the overall story. But all in all, like, this is an episode somebody could just tune in, never have seen an episode of Rebels before and pretty much know what was going on. And as a little one and done like that, it was decent. I gave it an 8.
You actually outscored me.
Again.
Yeah.
I'm surprised.
Yeah. Well, my average for an episode is a 7. And it's a good character episode for Zeb, even if it's in kind of a mediocre plot episode. It does move the plot forward on the Thrawn side, like you said. But this episode, the rest of the episode, is just kind of there. I would have been a little interested to see how it would have rolled out with Rex, but I do like the contrast with Chopper and AP5, like we were saying. But we also got to see how vital AP5 is, which I think is a very important thing for his character, who doesn't actually do a lot of stuff, but we got to see why he's important. Overall, it's a pretty all right episode, but I love Zeb, and I love Zeb content, so I gave it a little bump above for that. So I rated it a 7.5 out of 10. It wasn't quite an 8 for me. It wasn't quite there, but my average score is a 7 when it's just a complete average episode, and so I gave it a little bump for Zeb. Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. This week, our feedback comes from Twitter, and it's for our holiday commentary for Return of the Jedi, which we realized as I was looking for this, we forgot to post on Facebook. Sorry.
All right. The first one comes from Paul C. Kelly.
I will let you know that the dotted line is separating a conversation, so those last three is a conversation.
Okay. Paul C. Kelly says, on last viewing of this, I finally noticed Dengar on Jabba's right, Luke's left when Jabba sends him into the Rancor pit. My question is how all those guys, gals working for Jabba tolerate those sleeping conditions on the floor, LOL. Unlimited booze, maybe. Yeah, they're wasted. That's what it is.
Yeah.
And they like being by their boss.
All up in their spice.
Yeah. All right. And then, is replied by the Hammer Strikes. The Hammer Strikes being the podcast of Gene, the Deus Ex Machine.
The what machine?
You've never heard the phrase Deus Ex Machina?
Oh, I always say Deus.
Deus Ex Machine.
Oh, when you said Deus Ex, I was
Deus
like
Ex.
I heard Deus Ex Machine. I was like, Deus
is correct. Deus is the correct Deus pronunciation.
Ex. I was like, what is a Deus Ex Machine?
Deus Ex, Deus Ex Machina. Yep. No. Okay. Well, anyway, this is Gene, the machine of God. Says, I think sometimes you got. I think something you guys were forgetting is that Lando and Chewie were going off to find Boba Fett. They didn't know where exactly he was taking Han. The rendezvous is on Tatooine because Luke had to go there anyway to get anything he could from Ben's hut.
I think this was in reference because we weren't sure how much time had passed, I think. I think that's what this Gene corrected.
Yes. Yes.
But I think that's what it was, because we were saying at the beginning that we weren't sure how much time had passed, and I was trying to find it, and I couldn't figure out where it was, and so we started debating time, so.
All right, this is a different conversation, but this one's with Gene and Hope. And Gene says, on a different note, Anakin is a Force ghost because he got absolved before he died, so all was forgiven. There's a reason I'm a heathen. And Hope says, which works in the 80s, but not today. It does not sit well with me because Luke and more so Leia had to deal with his bullshit. Anakin just got the okay and it was magically okay again. Nope, not okay. Gene says, I'm right there with you. As soon as I was old enough to think critically about it, I didn't like it. You might like the scene in the novel, The Truce at Bakura, which is set immediately after Return of the Jedi, where Anakin's ghost visits Leia to apologize, and she just tears into him.
Good for her. Yeah. I love Anakin Skywalker.
Well, that's usually what happens when a long-lost parent shows up. You know, you gotta have a little bit of that first before you can make up with them.
Do you want to do the big white one?
Let me see if I can find it. I just had the...
The Sirius Pralines suit.
Oh, yes.
There's letters in there I don't know how to pronounce.
This looks very Nordic.
Yeah. Well, if you don't know... It is Nordic. If you don't know what we're doing, Chris hates American Kit Kats because he's a weirdo. So our friend Dario sends us candy from all over the world to review. And Dario is Chris's co-back. I can't talk. Chris's co-podcaster for Eat It and Beat It, and he's lovely and we love him. And this week we're doing the Sirius Bar, which comes from Iceland. Ooh. It's a Sirius with words that I can't pronounce after that because there's
I letters. Like Iceland. That's where Bjork comes from. That's where the best, that's where if you put your VPN on Iceland, you can get the most neatest stuff because they're, okay, it looks like kind of chocolate. It might be filled chocolate. It's hard. They're lumpy.
Break off a piece.
Oh, yeah, they are. Huge. Yeah, they're caramel. Mmm.
Mmm.
Caramel filled.
Mmm. That's just good.
There's actually a couple layers. There's sort of a little soft chocolate. No, maybe that's just a piece of chocolate that fell off into the caramel. Never mind.
Mmm.
Good, good.
Mmm.
Oh, it's very milky once you start chewing them both together. Mmm.
Cherish milk chocolate play ream with salt caramel filling. It says in English on the back.
With salt caramel?
Salt caramel filling.
Oh. I'm not getting the salt that much from the caramel.
The chocolate's kind of strong. I can kind of taste the salt in it.
Mmm. The word med salt caramel and fuel filling goo.
Mmm. I'm going to have to eat more of that later. It's huge.
Well, there's a lot of it. Yeah, that's going to last me days and days now that I've opened it up.
Mmm.
It's a big old Hershey bar size.
Thank you, Dario. We love you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, did you have anything else for Warhead, Chris?
No, I'm all Warheaded out.
All right.
I'm just about to Warhead out.
Well, where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at tutufreaks.com. That's our podcast website where we post all our podcasts. And they all have their own little categories, so you can look at all the back episodes, all the podcasts that are out of commission, all the brand new podcasts are all there. And it's in the process of getting a revamp, so I'm doubting by the time you hear this, you'll see the revamp, but it will be close. It is coming soon. Unless you're listening to this 3 years in the future, then it's just the same old website, guys. You can also find us on Twitter, and our Twitter feed is run by Gene, the podcasting machine.
Sex machine. Gene.
And you can see all our podcasts there. You can see us on Facebook. We have the Two True Freaks podcast Facebook page and the Two True Freaks Cantina, which is more of a sort of hangout place, whereas the Two True Freaks podcast place is more of just a place to see what's cooking. And I think that's about it. Where can they find you, Hope?
You can find me at JGuys and Jedi on Twitter. I run our Twitter account. You can also find me at Hope Molinax on Twitter. I'm still in the process of rebuilding Geek Girl Experience, so it's coming along, and we've hit another bump in the road, but that's part of rebuilding. But I've already started kind of pinning out my first Clone Wars blog, so as soon as I actually get to where I can really start posting stuff on Geek Girl Experience, you better believe I'm going to be reviewing Clone Wars. And you can also find me on Archive of Our Own under the name Chaos Lydia. I have Star Wars fanfiction on there, including Thrawn fanfiction. I am so excited for next week's episode. It's actually one episode I've been jonesing to get to since The Mandalorian.
Oh, really?
It's Trial of the Darksaber.
Oh,
where it's the one where they're training
Sabine. Yeah, this is going to be...
We've had a couple of short episodes the last few weeks, but I can almost promise you this is probably going to be a longer episode for us. Because For one, this is the best Sabine episode of the entire series, so I am stupid excited for it. But I love this episode because Sabine was such a strong character from the gate, and so where everybody else had time to, like, go up, she was so strong out of the gate. I love this episode because she can only go down, and they rip her to pieces, which is so good. That sounds morbid to say. But it's really good for her character because they just
good for character development, yes.
Yeah, they tear her apart, and it's what is kind of needed for her character because she's always been high from the get-go, so she needs to go down. I love this episode. I'm so excited to talk Trial of the Darksaber next week. So excited.
Yeah, man. That Sabine, she's always high. She's got to go down. Sounds like a gang fight's brewing, Hope. Gonna take her high ass down.
She's an artist type, so being high is kind of normal.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
Yeah, man. Well, I guess
go out, do some graffiti, man.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS. You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com. Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
We were finally invited aboard one of these spacecraft, which landed near Ann Arbor, Michigan on October the 24th of 1954. This is a drawing of the craft. As I was leaving the craft, the commander, Soltek, said, "Soon others of your people will be able to have an experience similar to this."